So just kind of raise your hands. They're under the age of 40. Winston, you are not you are not there. So, Winston, how many of you are over the age of 40? You can raise your hands. So here is, for both of you this morning, for the older group, so for me and older, this morning is going to hit you differently than it is the younger ones. And here's why. You grew up in an era where there was, and this is not to be sarcastic at all, but you grew up in an era where there was an understanding of kind of like a, there's a morality that is accepted across cultures that if I behave a certain way, this is what goodness looks like. And you have believed a lie your entire life that if you follow this, you're good. For the younger generation, we have kind of run away from the idea of an absolute morality, but because we were raised in homes and a culture that said we were incredibly special and we could do whatever we wanted to do and all of these things, we too have believed a lie that says we are amazing. It's true. Like, listen, this is our world. Like, this is North American culture right now, where my father's generation, kind of north of 40, that group, would look at the younger ones as kind of not good, no morals, lost their way. The younger ones would look up to the older ones with a very different lens of that way of life. But the issue underneath it all is this idea that both groups believe a lie that they are in fact good people. Welcome to church. This is by far the roughest conversation that I will ever have with you that comes from the scriptures. And it is crucial to understanding how we guard our heart if we can get through this morning. So if you would just pray with me that God would do what he needs to do in our hearts, that we would respond rightly, that we might flourish and live well. Let's just pray together. Our gracious and heavenly Father, whether we're 40 and older or 40 and younger, this morning is difficult to hear. And without the help of your Spirit to soften our hearts and to at least open our minds, we will leave here this morning the exact same, the way that we came in, believing lies about who we really are. Until we land on this place, there is no such thing as guarding our heart. There's no such thing as flourishing. And the opportunities of love and joy and hope and peace and contentment and rest are fleeting moments. And God, I pray this morning through your Spirit, you would do a marvelous work of breaking down kind of inner walls that we've built up about ourselves, that we would stop believing lies that we have told ourselves and begin to ground ourselves in your words and allow them to shape and cause our life to flourish in every way. We ask you to bless this time in your name. Amen. Last week, we started with this theme verse, and we'll put it up on the screen, and it's from Proverbs 4:23, and it reads, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." Would you read that with me? Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Everything you do flows from your heart. And again, if you weren't here last Sunday morning, this means that the decisions that you make, the actions that you perform, the things that you think about, the thoughts that you dwell on, the feelings that you cultivate, everything that you do flows from your heart or from your command center. Because we're not talking about the organ of your heart that pumps blood through the system. We're talking about this thing inside of us that drives us to do everything it is that we do. This is the command center. This is the heart that Jesus speaks of, that I'm talking to, and hopefully we would get to a place in a few weeks' time where we understand what it is, what it isn't, how we can guard it in a way that brings a flourishing in our life that is spectacular in every sense of the word. The reason why we're going down this kind of rabbit trail early in 2019 is because of this next slide. The heart is the crucial element in the flourishing of human life. There isn't a person alive on the planet that their goal for themselves is to experience flourishing in life, that they would experience joy and hope and love and patience and kindness and goodness and all of these inner qualities that we would strive for, that we would seek, that we would run to in one way or another. It is the heart, it is the command center that will lead one to a good life where they would experience these things, or it is the very thing that leads to a bad life. a life that's filled with suffering, a life that is laden with broken relationships, a life where we would experience very little, if any, love and peace and joy and hope. We ended last week by saying, guard our hearts, for it is the wellspring of all life. Well, for me, I was the kid and continue to be the kid that asks, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? How do I get there? I love to ask these kinds of questions because answers are facts and facts are our friends, and it shapes my understanding of the world in significant ways, particularly when I ground it in the work and person of Jesus Christ. In order for anyone to successfully guard their heart, we have to land at a very uncomfortable place as it relates to who we are. Picture kind of going into the doctor. You know something's wrong, and you've made the appointment. You sit with your doctor, and your doctor says, well, Phil, you have A, B, C wrong with you, and in order for this to be well, you have to kind of change your diet, do some exercise, and not play video games. Like, you have to do some of these things. I have a choice at that moment. I can either hear what the doctor is saying and leave and then make necessary changes so that my physical body would kind of turn a corner and begin to flourish, or I can leave and go and say, that guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he was talking about. Like, where did he get his degree? Like, where did he get his, like, all of these kinds of things. God, very much as the great physician, speaks very real words over our life. And they're not words at all with the intention to be mean or to harm or to bring destruction into your life, but to actually be the good physician to say there's something fundamentally wrong with you. And this morning, I already know this, the vast majority of you are going to walk away from here thinking that the good doctor is nuts, that I don't believe anything that he has to say to be true of my life. And your life will just continue to be what it's always been, struggling and searching for, never really attaining or accomplishing. But for some of you, this will hit home. Some of you, you will land in a place to say, actually, this is right. This actually describes everything of my life up until this moment. And for that person, the conversation of guarding heart becomes spectacular in the weeks to come. But we have to wade through this morning. So this morning is not a Hallmark card morning. It is a difficult conversation that I hope you just lean in and listen. And if nothing else, just be honest with what it is that I'm saying. That you'd be honest with your own life. That you'd be honest with the world in which you live. And it'd be amazing to see where God takes you in this particular journey. Because in order for us to really guard hearts, we have to land on this conclusion that God declares over our life that something is fundamentally wrong with me. And we'll begin with this particular passage of Scripture, Psalm 14, 2 and 3. The Lord looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. All have turned away. All have become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Paul quotes Psalm 14 in Romans 3, and then expands on it, and listen to how Paul describes humans from God's perspective. There is no one righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands. There is no one who seeks God. All have turned away. They have altogether become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways. The way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes. This literally is a 7-day news cycle of humanity over our world. These are incredibly uncomfortable blanket statements that God makes as he describes the human race. None of us live well. Which, in light of the conversation of guarding our heart, it means that the heart that is in you, the command center that is in you, that is in me, is corrupt. It is bent towards evil. Jeremiah writes it this way. He says this, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? John's gospel, there's a moment where Jesus is doing some pretty spectacular things through word and deed, where he's, by miracles, declaring that the kingdom of heaven has come and he is it, and they are to trust and follow him. And people see Christ and they respond to say, "You are the Messiah," and they want to declare him king. They want to declare him Messiah. And Jesus, understanding who it is that's speaking, describes this crowd this way. He says, "But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all people. He did not need any testimony about mankind, for he knew what was in each person." He knew what was in each person, a corrupted command center. The human heart, the command center, the place from which everything that we do flows from, is bent towards evil and death. And this is harsh. I understand that this is harsh. From Jesus to us, though, it's hard to argue against this. It is absolutely undeniable, because when you look across humans, just this year, every single sphere of humans reveals that it is awfully tainted by evil and sin. Every sphere of humanity reveals these words of Jesus towards us to be true. In the world of sports, I'm a huge athlete, I'm a huge fan of sports. I love to play, I love to watch. And you see this getting played out in every arena of the athletic world. If you're a Patriots fan, the lines of, "If you're not cheating, you're not trying," this is very much rooted in corrupt hearts. To the more heinous actions of NFL superstars who beat their significant others to the point of death, this is the corrupt heart on full display. When we watch anger and violence spill out from an MMA bout into the streets of Las Vegas, this is what Jesus is talking about. When you watch the young Japanese tennis star win the U.S. Open, to have that moment robbed from her opponent and the crowd as they bring boos down upon her, and to see her weep where she confesses to the crowd, "I know that all of you wanted her to win." And they rob her of this moment of victory. This is evil at display in the human world, in the world of politics. There is a never-ending trail of lies and deceit. It is so common now that we don't even bat an eye at it. "Oh, we all know he's lying." Like, this is what it has become, where no one believes anything because this is the new norm. In the world of church, the one place where we would think that it would be free of evil, it's not free of evil. It was this August where a story broke that some 300 priests over a span of 70 years abused more than 1,000 children in the state of Pennsylvania. This would just be one of the many examples how in every sphere of humans there is great evil being done, and it all comes from a heart that is corrupted and bent towards evil. There is no one person, there is no one organization, there is no one community of humans that is immune to the condition. Hence why it says, no one is good, not even one. If Jesus' words are true, and I believe that they are, then even children, newborns, ones born this week in our church family, they all suffer from "the heart is deceitful above all things. It is beyond cure." Psalm 51, David declares, "Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time that my mother conceived me." I have 4 kids. I totally get this. I have watched this heart at work in them from the early stages of their life to this past Wednesday. It was a snow day. Amy was gone. I had to get out of the house to protect them. Because I am in the category of no one is good, not even one. And by about noon, I'm like, we got to go for a drive, or it's just going to end bad. So we went to Tim Hortons and we bought 12 donuts. You do the math. We have 4. Everybody gets 3. And you can have 3 for the... Not at one time. I am not that bad of a parent. Like at least space it out by 15 minutes. Like, at least drag it out as long as we can. When we got home, I ate one. And I ruined the math of 4 and everybody gets 3. My oldest daughter was in the kitchen when she discovered that one was missing. And she's like, Dad. I'm like, I know. And you kind of had like the powder raspberry, so you really can't hide where the problem has been found. But Lauren very quickly says, oh, I know what we should do. And like literally within 3 seconds, she's like, well, this is how we solve it. I'm like, that is amazing. And then after 4 seconds, I'm like, Lauren, it's interesting that in your solution to this problem, you get 4. And everybody else doesn't. And she smiled and she kind of went on her way. And it's in these moments where it's on full display, beautiful, bright, wonderful, love her to death, evil at work in the human heart, in the ones that we love and cherish the most. To you parents out there, do you have to try to teach your kids how to share? The reason why you have to teach this is because it doesn't come naturally to them. Do you know what? We don't have to teach our kids how to fight, how to argue, how to hit, how to bite, how to throw temper tantrums. These things come naturally to them because this is what's at work in them. And as we grow, it just gets a little more sophisticated. But it's the same force at work that begins when we're young all the way through to the very end of our lives. It is the result of a heart that is corrupted. And as we grow, it's not just donuts that cause chaos in the home anymore. They're substantial things that create rifts and brokenness that when we were 4 and 5 and 8 and 9, we couldn't possibly fathom that we are where we are. All because of myself and my choices or other people and choices that have been done towards me. Jesus, in his own words, no one is good, not even one. We do not start life at a neutral position. We don't start out in a place where it could kind of go either way, pending what kind of forces are imposed upon us. We start from a place where we are bent towards evil and destruction. Now, I know this can stir up all kinds of reactions in us this morning. And we're going to get to some of those reactions in a moment. But first, I want us to understand what this corruption of our heart is. I want us to understand what is happening when a child demonstrates kind of natural selfishness in spectacular ways. I want you to understand what's happening and what's driving the priest who can sexually abuse kids. I want you to understand what it is in an athlete that would cause them to beat their spouse or their significant other without hesitation. There's something that's driving this in their lives. Romans 1 helps us get there. Verses 20 and 23. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal human beings, birds, and animals and reptiles. I want to say this as clearly as I can. God, he is the one who is worth being glorified. He is the one who is to be worshipped. He is the one that centers the entire created world. The cosmos, the universe is centered around him. God is the one that brings form and purpose to everything and everyone in the world, including you and I. But the text says that we exchange the one who is actually God for a new God. That's us. We are not interested in the creator. We are God. This is what unfolds in the garden. That first song that Dana sang, take me back to the garden. Take me back to the moment where I was a part of your creation rather than I wanted to rule over it as a small g god. Adam and Eve do the one thing that God asks them not to do, and sin and death enter the world, and the hearts of men and women from that day forward are corrupted, and we have been a witness of its corruption for thousands of years now. We have made ourselves to be God. And this is where I want you to lean in and listen, because this describes every one of us here this morning. We've made ourselves to be God. And as such, we are convinced that what we think and what we feel and what we believe is right. And our desires connected to me, who is now God, they will always be met because I'm God. This is why children are naturally selfish. They want what they want when they want it because they are God. They are the universe surrenders around them. And sharing the donut is opposed to their desire for more. This is why a priest and others can commit sexual abuse towards children. They have a sexual desire, and they are God. And this desire will be met. And so they meet it. This is why strong men in the athletic world can beat their spouse. They have desires. And in their significant other, that desire was infringed upon. This is its result. When we are gods, our desires will be met, period. Will be met, period. Because the heart is corrupted, because the heart is ruined. We've exchanged the one true God for the God of self. And it works itself out every day of our lives. Two questions I want to ask you. And you just think through this in your own mind. How do you respond to the idea that you're not good? For you 40-year-old and older, that you grew up following a set of morals, that if you did these, you're good. We don't do a lot of funerals, but when we do funerals, it's very fascinating to hear how people describe the deceased. We sometimes reach into very weird places to get to a place where we can declare that that person's good. Therefore, they must be fine. In the younger version of that, they were true to themselves. They must be good. They must be good. How do you respond to the idea or the declaration of Christ over your life that no one is good, not one, that includes you? That all the things that your mom told you when you were little, that all the cards that you wrote your boyfriend, girlfriend, all the things that we would say of our spouse, at the base level, no one is good, not one. How do you respond to the idea that you're your own God? For some of you, you're like, absolutely. I make no bones about it. It is about me and mine. And if you push me, just me. Because if mine rebel, just me. We are a witness of that in epic proportions right now in our culture. For some, we're like, well, I wouldn't say I'm God, but I too pay a lot of value in me. That's the same thing. That's the same thing. We're 2 weeks into a series called Guard Your Heart, Guard the Command Center. And if we can't land at this place, if we can't agree in our heart of hearts that what Jesus says about life and humanity, that we are bent towards evil, that our command center is ruined and corrupt, there is no conversation to be had about guarding your heart. There's none. It's just more of the same. Weird self-help type literature then will shape the rest of your life. If you refuse to land on this place, which I know the vast majority of us, we're going to leave, you're going to be kind of quietly mad at me, like this is all foolishness, like all the, but if you quietly just kind of walk away, like that's foolish, okay, then there's no conversation to be had about guarding your heart. Because you refuse to acknowledge what actually is at work in you. As we said last week, when these moments that we're not proud of show up, it's not because you didn't get enough sleep. It's not because of these external forces that are pressuring you. It's not anything other than your heart being in agreement, thinking, yeah, this is an infringement upon me and my desires. I will respond in a way that I deem right to preserve me, the greatest God in the world. This is the conversation. And if we can't get there, there is no conversation around guarding your most treasured possession that you have. But if you can get there and lean in an agreement where you can look at your life and say, oh my land, I have to work hard at not swearing. I have to work hard at not thinking awful thoughts towards people. I have to work hard at not letting those thoughts slip out. I have to work hard at not yelling and screaming when someone opposes me. I have no ability to stop myself from a habit that I know brings me harm. If you can acknowledge this, if you can acknowledge that, yeah, your life has been pretty much about you, that everything that you do really is with you in mind, you're after four donuts, that if that's kind of the narrative that you've lived your life, and you can see this, then there is a spectacular conversation that awaits us as it relates to guarding our heart. Truth be told, I think this is why the vast majority of Christians live their lives and it looks and sounds just like everybody else. They've never really understood and landed in a place to acknowledge that their hearts are in fact corrupt and ruined. I know lots of Christians who say, oh, I know that I'm a sinner. Like I know that there's mistakes that I've made and Jesus has forgiven me. That is a easy way to say, yeah, you actually believe the lie that you are good and these moments of failure are just oopses. Most Christians, and the data is just staggeringly sobering. They live their life, they don't know Jesus, they come to know Jesus and they keep going. And this life looks exactly the same as this life over here. We've just been good people that wasn't really in need of a savior, that didn't really need to deal with issues of the heart, but we like the idea of heaven. We just really haven't landed in the place of what Jesus describes our heart, in the fact that it can't be trusted because it is ruined, because it is corrupt. But if someone can say in their heart of hearts, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of being ruined. I'm tired of the corrupt that leaks out. I'm tired of this cycle that I've created in my life. I'm growing weary of this. There is hope for that person. God does something amazing with that person that can get to that place. If they can agree in their hearts that what he says of my life and my heart are true, that if there's an agreement and move into, I want to hear more of this, I want to know more of this, I want to experience a flourishing that's spectacular, then there is some pretty awesome news, because God does something in that person that is amazing. He actually, as the good physician, replaces the heart with a new one. He replaces the heart with a new one. We'll put it up on the screen because this is an unbelievably amazing verse. I will, this is God speaking over his people, I will give you a new heart. I will put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you. If we refuse to acknowledge what Jesus says to be true of my life, my heart, my command center, this never happens in a person. I can't remove my heart of stone. I have no heart of flesh to put in. I have no spirit of any value that would cause any flourishing in my life or in the lives of those around me. But if I can acknowledge that, yes, your words of my life are in fact true, God then looks at his son and daughter that he loves greatly, that he's created for his goodness and glory, that he longs for them to flourish and experience life, and says, I will do in you that which I've longed to do, which is take out from you the heart that has been ruined and corrupted, and I will give you a new one. And not only a new heart, but I will give you my spirit that lives inside it, which brings a flourishing that you can never experience on your own. And for that person, there is a guarding of the heart that is spectacular, which we get into next week, but we have to go through this water first. My question to you to close, and you need to just sort this out in your own way, in your own time. But will you entrust your heart to God? Will you kind of be honest that, hey, I'm in all these different spheres of humanity that are obviously ruined and corrupted by a command center that is awful. And I could go around this room, I won't, but I could go around this room and share stories of how this has worked itself out in our own lives, either us doing something or done to us, that the only logical reason for it is, in fact, what Jesus says, the heart is ruined and corrupt. And because I am my own God, I will act and do in a way that's awful towards someone else, but I don't really care because it's about me. That comes from your heart. And it comes out in all kinds of ways. And God, in his comedy, has a way of revealing this to be true all the time. When people rush to get married, let's get married. I'm all for marriage. It is the greatest blessing to reveal this truth of me. It's just ridiculous how often I'm like, oh, goodness. Have children. Let's have kids because that will fix. What? Let's invite a broken human into a home that's already broke. Surely that will fix itself. Nope. It is just more death upon death because God, by his grace, says, I want to show you just how ruined your heart is so that you might be healed. Will you entrust your heart to him? So will you? If the answer is yes, the conversations that are coming forward about how to guard it, spectacular. And next week we wade into this in beautiful ways. And I hope that next week, above all weeks, that you'll actually walk away with this sense of like, oh, this is amazing. It doesn't have to be what it's always been. It doesn't have to feel like I'm on my own trying to sort out the complexities of life, particularly the complexities of my heart that are forever deceiving me and tricking me. Will you entrust your heart to God? And for you Christians, this is not a one-off. Oh, I did when I was 7. I'm 40. I did when I was 9. And every year that goes by, I just grow in the reality of, oh my goodness, Phil, you just can't trust it at all. Because on my own devices, no one is good, not even one. No one is righteous, not even one. But I know this, after now almost 3 decades of following Christ, I am coming to a place where I quickly entrust my heart to God. Quickly, what do you say about life and how do I respond? Because I know if it's just me, a lot of people get hurt in the process. Will you entrust your heart to God? Will you come to the place where you acknowledge that it's just ruined? If so, fantastic conversations of guarding your heart. If not, there's nothing to guard because it's just ruined. Let's pray.